Okay, good morning. Just give me one second to... Here we go. Okay, this morning what I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about is an evaluation that we conducted. It's actually part of an evaluation we conducted looking at the national network among new local health officials. The national network that we're talking about are new local health officials that were enrolled in the Survive and Thrive training program. And it's called Survive and Thrive Roadmap for New Local Health Officials. It was developed by the National Association of County and City Health Officials, better known as NACHO, and was funded through the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And the primary goal of this training program was to prepare new local health officials with the necessary knowledge and skills to succeed, hence Survive and Thrive, within the multifaceted environment of public health practice. The target audience that they chose were new local health officials, for example, local health directors, local health officials, local health administrators, commissioners, who have been in their local health departments 2 years or less. So they were really looking at those individuals that were new in the local health department to try as to give them as much information as they could early on, and the skills that they focused on were leadership and managerial skills so that they could help them succeed in that new position as quickly as possible. So in essence, if you want to think about it as an orientation type program, it was sort of akin to that. So the format of the Survive and Thrive training program was 100 contact hours over a 12-month period. So it was a year-long training program. Before they came together and met for their workshops, they had pre-workshop assessments. There were some personality assessments that they took, some decision-making assessments, as well as a 360 feedback assessment that we developed. It was tailored specifically for this training program. They attended 3 in-person workshops. So they took the pre-assessments, then they went to their first workshop, 6 months later, second workshop, 6 months later, final workshop, where they met face-to-face. And one of the things they did, particularly with the information from the 360 assessment, was to develop individual development plans. And what these were, now the first year, this was what you're going to see is the pilot cohort, the first cohort. The first year, we had them to pick 10 tasks that they were going to work on over the course of the year using the training program as a resource. What we soon found with that was 10 tasks were too many. So in subsequent years, we're having them choose 5 tasks. But nonetheless, what we told them was to pick tasks that they were already responsible for or already engaged in their local health department, critical tasks that they knew they needed to at least in part accomplish during this first year. And that way, the training program could be used as a resource for them in order to accomplish those critical tasks. They did that through interactions between the workshops as well as the face-to-face workshops. So they had group conference calls. Typically, these occurred monthly. And those were with their coach. There was a coaching component. And the coach was, each coach was responsible for a small group. So they met not only with the coach, but also with their small group members and talked about events that were going on in their health department as well as tasks that were on their individual development plan. And the way the program was designed was to have approximately 30 in each cohort. The coaches, and this is an important thing to note, the coaches were senior local health officials. It wasn't just a generic executive coach. It was someone who has been in that position for 10 to 15 years, who has knowledge to transfer to the newbies, to those new local health officials, so that we were trying to bridge that knowledge gap that's occurring as the senior people are retiring in the local health departments and before the people coming on board have time to gain that knowledge transfer. So the training program was also trying to bridge that knowledge gap. Okay. So what I'm going to focus on today was one of the most important parts, or they deemed one of the most important parts of the Survive and Thrive training program, and that was to develop social networks. They really had sort of a 3 sub-goals. In that they wanted to develop esprit de corps among those new local health officials at a national level. They wanted to build the network among the new local health officials, again, at a national level. In the first cohort, we had local health officials from 25 states and the District of Columbia, so they were spread out across the country. And likely those folks wouldn't have been in contact with each other or one another without this training program. So they wanted to see the effects of that, and did it, in fact, increase fellows' sense of pride in being a local health official. So what I decided to do as their evaluator was to use social network analysis to evaluate these relationship building and relationship maintenance. The first cohort, it ended up being approximately, it was 27, it started out at 29, new local health officials and their coaches were evaluated. And we examined the network development from workshop one to workshop two to workshop three, and then maintenance 6 months out after they had graduated from the training program. And what we did was I administered the Survive and Thrive social networking survey to each of the fellows following each workshop, and then to the fellows and the coaches following training, meaning once they had graduated. And essentially what we did was, if you're familiar with social network analysis, it's essentially, we used a bounded network, and that's just a fancy way of saying, we didn't ask them, who do you contact? We literally listed the individuals in the cohort, and then had them identify who they contacted for advice, who they contacted for support, who they contacted to solve work-related problems. And as we did this, we were trying to get some indication of that sense of connectedness of, were they in contact with each other as a result of this training? In essence, it's indicating the degree they perceive the other LHOs as sources of knowledge, advice, and support. The program that we used to analyze the data, and some of you all may be familiar with this, I'm a big proponent of UCINET. I think it's an awesome social network analysis program. But essentially we used UCINET, and what we looked at was density measures. And density really does measure the connectedness of the group. So it's the proportion of ties present to all possible network ties. And a network tie is, if they ask me, who do I go to for advice, and I indicate you, then that's a network tie. So what you look at is all possible ties versus how many reported ties among the network. So the density can range from zero, meaning I don't indicate anybody, to one, which means I indicate everyone in the room and they indicate me, okay? It is highly unlikely, as networks get bigger, that you're gonna say, who do you go to for advice, even a network as small as 27 people, and all 27 are gonna contact all 27 for advice. We know that's kind of unrealistic. So Mayhew and Levenger ran some computer models to see what is the actual range, because we know that's not practical. These are busy folks, they're new in their job, they're not gonna contact everybody, but what can we say if it's a dense network? What's a realistic number? And what they found was density ranges really don't range from 0 to 1, unless it's an extremely small network. In a network as large as 27, more realistic is 0 to 0.5, we would consider very dense. Okay, so take a look at this. These are the densities, and the workshops are listed across the top, 1, 2, 3, and post is 6 months post. And then these are the actual questions that we asked them and that they reported out. Who do you go to for support? Who do you go to for advice? Who do you go to solve work-related problems? We also, we conducted this during the H1N1 outbreak. The post actually happened during H1N1, so for that questionnaire, I asked them, who did you contact regarding H1N1? And then we also asked the question, who do you intend to contact in the future? Again, that occurred post. And I don't want to be confusing here. The coaches were only present in the network diagram in the post. Okay, so what you're seeing in parens then is those densities with the coaches present. Again, a realistic range is going to be 0 to 0.5, okay? 0.5 considered perfectly cohesive. And this really shows the effect that they seek advice. Now think about it, who you seek advice is probably going to occur more frequently than who you go to for support. And you have to think of that in terms of that. It's sort of akin to who you consider acquaintance versus who you consider a friend. These deeper relationships typically appear to be less dense because we may consider many individuals to be an acquaintance, but few individuals to be a friend. And that's the same thing you're going to see with who do you go to for advice versus who do you go to for support. But one of the things that struck me from these results is the coaches appear to play a bigger role in the go-to for support than in any other areas. And that is, I think, relatively understandable, given that they looked at those coaches as senior local health officials, as someone that if they did have a problem, that is someone they would go to for support. So the depth of that relationship is understandable, given the type of relationship between coaches and the fellows, or coaches and the trainees. They are also, if you look at this, using each other as resources, but it should be noted that they're not contacting everyone about a problem, okay? This makes sense, though, because they're going to contact more people to go to for advice versus go to for support versus contact regarding H1N1. They're going to know the key people when they have a very specific relationship. But let me just say what's striking about these results is what you can see is a natural progression of the connectedness following each of those face-to-face workshops. And what we found was critical to the relationship building was that workshop too. That's when they'd already been assigned to their groups, that's when they'd had some teleconference calls virtually, and they really capitalized on those relationships during that workshop too. And that's important when you're thinking about, in many leadership and managerial training programs are thinking about, how often should we meet face-to-face, which of those face-to-face meetings are most critical. And what these results suggest is that once they get to know each other a little bit, somewhere midway through that training program, that's a critical time for that face-to-face interaction with respect to relationship development. Okay, these are the numbers, and this, you know, the pattern of this or the trends of this make intuitive sense. But to really make sense of what you're seeing, what you do is UCINET, within it, has a program called NetDraw. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with that, but essentially, it gives a graphical depiction to those numbers. Okay, what I want to just give you a heads up on before I show you the graphs, because the graphs are, I think, quite interesting to look at. But be aware that the fellows, and the fellows, we call the trainees the fellows, they're the small squares. In the graphs that you're going to see, the coaches are the big squares. And the colors represent the small groups in the program, because every coach and every fellow was in a small group. And the lines, as I said, represent the relationship or the ties, who reported who in that relationship. The stronger the network, the stronger the relationship, the more of those lines or those ties you're going to see on the graph. Now, this is a little bit small, but I think given what you're seeing there, you can make sense of this. This is the specific graphs for fellows reported, go to, give, or receive support. And what you'll see here, let me refer to my notes so I don't miss anything that I want to tell you. You see the progression of who they go to for support over time. And as I said, in workshop two, and well, it's a close tie between workshop two and workshop three, you're seeing a very, very dense connected network. You're seeing what we were hoping to see. They've built some sort of strong support system as a result of this training over time. And be aware that these individuals did not know each other at all. And that's why you see a much weaker system during that workshop one versus workshop two and workshop three. The other thing I want to point out, you see these little green dots occurring on the side, those are what we call social isolates. Those are folks that no one reported going to for support. What happened after workshop one was two individuals dropped out, one due to medical reasons and one due to the fact she decided she did not want to be a local health officer. She wanted to go back, finish her doctorate in public health policy, and work on public health at a national level. So the two dots that you're seeing are those two individuals. Although one person kept in touch with her after workshop two, she fell out of the network after workshop three. And again, you can see them appearing post-graduation. Okay. But again, you can see that following workshop two and workshop three is really when they're going to each other most for support. This is the graph with the coaches in it. Okay, and just take a look at that for a couple seconds. What you see is, in terms of, and again, those coaches are those big boxes, the coaches play key roles in the support network. Okay, and this is expected given the depth of the network, support versus advice. And again, you can see those two social isolates present. Okay. And the network appears integrated, but what you see when you really take a look at it is there's a real influence of those small groups, because what you see is all those fuchsias are kind of tied together. They do go outside of the network, but they create sort of their own resource system. Same thing, you can see it in the reds, you can see it in the blues, you can see it in the blacks, you can see it somewhat in the greens, is that they do go outside those small groups, but to a lesser extent. The other thing that's interesting here too is the coaches, if you see, are quite connected too. The coaches formed somewhat of a cohesive network just among themselves because they used each other as support and getting advice from each other on how to be better coaches. Okay. Let's take a look at one more slide. Again, this one is really striking, where you can see who they go to give or receive advice. We did it bi-directional so that if one indicated they went to for advice, we immediately said the other one, gave the other one credit for that network tie. And what you'll see again from workshop one to workshop two to workshop three is they are using each other much more readily as advice givers and seekers. You'll notice post-graduation that the network is, it's denser than in workshop one, but there's a key player, as you can see, in the center. There's one individual that post-graduation, almost everyone said they either gave or received advice from. And this individual was one of our key players as we developed the program for the second year, as we've moved forward into the next phase, which is a national and a state program. This individual has been a really strong advocate for the program, and she really is one of those individuals that keeps that network connected, and we also capitalized on that in terms of developing for the next year. Okay. And again, this depicts with those larger squares the coaches within that network. And what you'll see is, again, this person that's the fellow that's red, that's sort of our key player that keeps everyone connected. But you'll see there's strong connections with the coaches even post-training. They developed quite interesting relationships between fellows and coaches. As the training initiated, the coaches were seen, because they were more senior in their position, as there was sort of a power thing where they were seen as a higher level from the fellows. And what we saw was, as the training progressed, as the fellows gained more knowledge and gained more confidence, they started putting themselves more on a similar plane with the coaches and started using each other as a resource. And you can see that here. But also what we found quite striking was the coaches also started using each other for advice. And that was somewhat unexpected for us, because we hadn't originally set up the program to do that, but that sort of developed organically on its own. The other thing, when you're looking at these, one of the things when you're doing social network that I'm a big advocate for is when you're trying to interpret these graphs is to make sure that you have feedback sessions with some of the individuals that were a part of the network. Because sometimes what you think you're seeing in a graph, and if you talk to some of key informants, what is actually going on may be slightly different. So just to let you know, we feel it very important that we have qualitative information to follow a line with the quantitative information of these graphs. So I had feedback meetings with coaches and fellows looking at the graphs to get some of their input, but I also gathered qualitative data with respect to what were they saying about these networks and what made sense. And these are two fairly striking comments that we got back from the fellows within the cohort, that we knew that they had, in a sense, really developed a strong cohesive network, and they gave us some very good information about how in future years we can capitalize on that to create a training system that supports that network, not just during training, but also over time. So, what did we find out from all of our data? Well, we found out that those small groups, as we saw in the graphs, do play a key role in developing the relationships, as well as those coaches. The fellows stressed the importance of interactions and a national network. They said likely it was one of the few opportunities, particularly those local health officials from smaller health departments, would have ever had in terms of exposure to their counterparts in those larger health departments that were geographically dispersed from them. And one of the comments that we have, and it seems somewhat contradictory, they would say, we are so different from each other, but yet we're so alike. And they really got a feeling for that from that national network. And they were big proponents of, they wanted us to keep the program at the national level. The fellows made it very clear they wanted to remain in contact with the cohort beyond the programmatic year. We saw that in the almost perfectly dense thing of perfectly cohesive state response to, do you want to stay in contact with these people? And they are, in fact, staying in contact with each other. So one of the things that we reported back to NACHO and to RWJ was that they really should foster contacts across the program years so that as they develop these strong network ties, they can also, because they're identifying so readily with being a Survive and Thrive program member, that we can create not just one national network, but use that to bind cohort one network to cohort two and have a much stronger, more global national network of local health officials. The other thing that we suggested them was to track the network over time to examine changes in the network structure. One of the things with respect to this study, was that we were looking at just the network itself, but it also I think is quite interesting, and a question that many folks are asking is, how do then you use that network and your connections within it to create a broader network beyond those fellows or those individuals within your group? And then again, to track the network over time, to examine the use of ties to expand that network. Okay, I'm sorry, I ran out of time.